So let your colors run tonight. We're painting in the dark. Let your colors run tonight. The colors of your heart.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Catchy Blackie podcast. My name is Patrick Engel, and I am a pastor down in Southwest Colorado in the corner in Durango. And I'm joined tonight by my good friend Jonathan Spring, who is a pastor out in, are you on the West Texas
area? No, the Dallas area.
Dallas area. All right, at Catalyst Church of the Nazarene. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
Doing really good. Really good. Excited for this Revelation stuff. It's been fun.
Nice. So as many hearers or listeners to our podcast probably already know, we tend to do a couple podcasts in a row. And this week, the podcast that we are doing, we have started the Monday after Easter. Wait, mm-hmm. The Tuesday after Easter. Today is Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes.
So today is Tuesday, and we just celebrated our Easter services, which kicked off at the Eastertide. How did your guys' Easter services go?
Really good. We had a lot of fun with it, and just basically laid the groundwork for what it means, kind of basically this book, I'm not bookend, but like a hinge Sunday between our Lent series and the Easter series, and talked about the powers of our life that are against us or that are in our world, and the way that they sorry, my son's just walked in.
Awesome.
All right, we're good. Oh,
okay. Get out.
So just talked about the powers that came at Jesus, and that they always held death over our heads, and what Jesus tells them is that death isn't the end. So
yeah, as like the ultimate dead weight. Yeah, that's how I approach it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I thought it was. I mean, I know a lot of people have their views and feelings about John, especially lectionary preachers, because John tends to just pop up at the most random times. But I really like the Easter text, the John Easter text. I just think it's the best narrative.
Yeah.
Just with all of its intricacies and highlights.
Yeah, basically like the whole passion, like following from the supper, you know, the meal that he shares.
Right.
I mean, it's just three chapters of him praying and talking with them. I mean, it's just so intricate and so intimate.
Well, and just that, like, even like, I mean, Holy Week begins like on John, is it 10 or 12 or something like that? Like, I mean, basically half of John is the last week of Jesus on earth.
Yep.
Of Jesus's life on earth. And I really like, I dig the theologians that get into like the paradox of like the passion, and resurrection. And they kind of like talk about how they're just two different perspectives of the same thing that's going on. And I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff that I personally enjoy in John. So I like it when Easter rolls around and we get to preach those texts.
Yeah. JR and I both love John, and he's like, we don't ever get to like go through John a whole lot, like from start to finish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. Well, and that brings up for Eastertide, our Catchy Lecty series is Identity Crisis. And if you follow along with us, and if you use our material, we are mainly going to be emphasizing the book of Revelation out of the lectionary, but we're also going to be talking about the intersections with the gospel readings, which are out of the book of John. And so how the gospel of John intersects with the book of Revelation. It's just really, I think it's important just to highlight that there are differences, that the gospel of John is probably written by the Johannine community and is not necessarily the same John who is considered John the Revelator,
mm-hmm.
who writes the gospel of Revelation. So I think we just need to talk about that there are differences between the two, and I mean, in kind of in their Christologies and how they kind of view who Jesus is, where John is very adamant that, I mean, Jesus is the full nature of God revealed. And John, the revelator, from out of Revelation, is adamant that Jesus is the Messiah and the firstborn and the inheritor of all things that are new. So there is some slight differences and nuances, and I think that's just important to know as you study these passages, just so that you don't get confused. I don't think it'll make a big deal in our preaching.
Right.
But we probably highlight that.
Yeah, and I think when we were doing the planning, there was a sense of wanting to use Revelation passages, but knowing that where some of our churches are at, it would be tough to be all in Revelation. So pairing it with the gospel allows us to get a picture of Jesus that he shares himself, along with a picture of the church that is shared in Revelation, and the church, of course, worshiping the Lamb, which we're going to talk about in just a minute.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, and I think that's a really good point, is that there are a lot of churches that may not necessarily be capable of hearing the sermons that are going to be preached out of Revelation, at least specifically the way that we're going to talk about Revelation, because the reason why we call it the identity crisis is because the church in America, frankly, is struggling with what it means to be people marked by the Lamb. I mean, and a lot of, if you grew up in an evangelical church, you probably heard the mark of the beast a lot, which, you know, is either the chip in your wrist that allows you to pay for things at Walmart, or, you know, or a tattoo of the number 666 on your forehead.
Yeah.
But I think what a lot of people have failed to recognize, which probably led to an even larger identity crisis, is that there's also the mark of the Lamb and the people who are marked by the blood of the Lamb, which we'll get into when we talk about Eastertide week 4.
Mm-hmm.
But really, like, are we going to be marked by the beast, or are we going to be marked by the Lamb?
And I think in one of the series that we did, we borrowed heavily from John Middendorf, who adamantly said over and over again throughout the entire series that we can be so concerned about getting marked by the beast that is to come that we forget to recognize if we've been marked already.
Did he really say that?
Mm-hmm.
That is, man, John, he always surprises me.
Yeah.
Which brings up a good point, is that we have a couple good theologians who handle the book of Revelation.
Yep.
John Middendorf being one of them, and you can probably go on their website at okcfirst.org and find his podcasts, his sermon podcast where he covered the book of Revelation. And then also Scott Daniels, who, when he was at Pasadena NAS, he did, I think it was like 6 months, he just preached on the book of Revelation, and he wrote blog posts that went along with each scripture passage. So, I mean, those two are worth looking
and actually,
at.
And also, if you're interested in taking a little, like, more of a class format, J.R. Forresteros did a class that he has in podcast form that's 12 hour-long podcasts that are him teaching Revelation to us, basically a Sunday school class type setting. He and John actually just did that webinar on Revelation just a couple weeks ago. So,
right, that's right. They did do that webinar, and I hadn't heard JR, so I don't really know his views on Revelation. I mean,
they're in
so
line.
I can't
yeah. I understand. they're in line with the way we're talking about it. So.
Yeah, I figured they are, but I'll have to listen to those classes. And before he gets the Patrick stamp of approval, if there is, there's not. cool. And then I think also it's just important to recognize too, that there are, with this whole idea of identity crisis and what does it mean to be marked by the Lamb and to be people of this crucified and resurrected Messiah, that Revelation is an apocalyptic format. So, I mean, it's considered apocalyptic literature. So it takes after a very Jewish tradition that's in the form of parts of Isaiah, Daniel, and most of the book of Ezekiel. that is meant to not necessarily prophesy about a distinct future, but to use catastrophic language to almost cause dissonance and disconnect between people, so that they could take on a new perspective or a new understanding of the world around them. So one way of preaching Revelation is to say that it's talking about very specific events in our day and age, or perhaps even a couple more hundred years from now, and to associate certain cultural events with certain events that are depicted in Revelation. But it's really important for us to understand that when the book of Revelation was written, when more the letter of Revelation was written, it wasn't intended to predict a specific future as much as it was to intended to display specific ideas and understandings of what it means to be Christians in any day and age.
Yeah, so, and just by the book of the title of Revelation, that apocalyptic, it just means to reveal. And in essence, Revelation is trying to pull Jesus and the Revelator John writing the letter, or trying to pull back the curtain on the current reality, not some future reality.
Right.
How the powers are at work, and that the ones that claim to have the power don't have the power, and that the power is not held by might, but by sacrifice.
Sacrifice, yeah.
So.
Yeah. And like, and I like to say, I mean, I say this about anything. I was like, the gospel is good news for people today. And if we try to make it anything else, then it's not the gospel. And yeah. Same for Revelation. Like the Revelation is meant for the people, for the church, for the people known as the church in any context at any time. And when we try to make it about a specific context and take it out of its original focus, then it's not... We're using it for what it's not intended to use. So that's those are the important things that we need to understand before we get into these passages. So do you want to start by reading the Revelation? Yeah, we've already covered Eastertide week 2. So we're going into Eastertide week 3, which is on April 3rd. And that's Revelation chapter 5.
Yeah. Revelation 5. 11 through 14. And it's actually going to be April 10th.
10th. Yes. Sorry
about that. No problem. So here we go. Then I looked and I heard the voice of many angels surrounding the throne and the living creatures and the elders. They numbered myriads of myriads and thousands upon thousands, singing with full voice, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slaughtered to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them singing, "To the one seated on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever." And the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshiped.
And the John chapter 21, 1 through 19 passage. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." And they said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. And just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" And they answered him, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from land, only about 100 yards off. And when they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now, none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them. And he did the same with the fish. And this was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. And when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to them, and he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know everything." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belts and to go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." And he said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. And after this, he said to him, "Follow me." All right.
Yeah.
So those are the two passages. And they both have a lot of meat in them. Revelation 5, even though it's that short passage from 11 through 14, I think you would do it injustice if you actually took it out of the larger context of
chapter five. Yeah.
Right. And then John 21 is just a super long passage. And it's probably a more familiar passage, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of sermons preached on this passage, and specifically focusing just on the dialogue between Peter and Jesus about feeding the sheep. So I don't really want to spend a lot of time on that specifically, but there are some things in John that I think match with the entire passage, with the entire chapter of Revelation 5.
Mm-hmm.
What are initially just your thoughts? Your church, you guys are going to mainly be looking at the Revelation passage, correct?
We will be using both. And basically the gist of the Revelation passage that we'll be addressing is the fact that this lamb is worthy of being worshipped because it was slaughtered. That the sacrificial death of the lamb is what makes it possible for it to be worshipped. That the Lion of Judah being a lamb is important. That it's not like, "Hey, Jesus, good job on the whole lion stuff. I know you had a hiccup when you got killed, but you got that sorted and now you're back to all this lion stuff and just in time for us to conquer our enemies." No, the Lion of Judah actually conquers by dying, that God is the slaughtered lamb. He is the one who wins by dying. And it is that very willingness to die, to sacrifice himself, that makes him worthy. And so that's kind of where we're going to focus in the Revelation passage. It's painting that picture that the God way, the way that of Jesus is one of sacrificial living and forgiveness is basically kind of how we're going to be taking. He's worthy to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor because he sacrificed.
Well, and I think that's key for this Revelation passage is that. This is like the center of the book of Revelation. So if you don't get chapter 5, you're not going to get the rest of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to understand all the passages leading up to chapter 5, and you're not going to understand all the passages that come after chapter 5. And the key is the fact that the lion is the lamb. So I love like how the kind of build up to this imagery of who is worthy to open the scroll. And John wept because it seemed as if no one was worthy to take the scroll and to fulfill the will of the Almighty One. And then the elder comes alongside of John and says, "Don't weep, for look, here comes the lion from the tribe." And so you get this whole great imagery of like, what the lion is to be and all that is entailed with this. I mean, of power and might and victory and, you know, mm-hmm. defeating of our enemies just mm-hmm. is all packed in that phrase that don't weep because here comes the lion who is worthy to open the scroll. Like, we've got this. And then when John heard the lion roar, and then when he looked, what he saw was the lamb that was, and in Greek, it's not just was slain, but was continuously slain. Mm-hmm. It's this aorist tense of like continually slain. Mm-hmm. And so the lion is the lamb.
Mm-hmm. And that's a hard concept. I mean, we like lions. We like power. We look and we want power. We want, you know, we looked at that at Good Friday in our responsive readings, that like, no, we don't want a king that dies. We want a king that wins. We don't want a king that takes nails in his hands. We want a king that puts swords in his enemies' bellies. I mean, power is being flipped on its head once we reach the kingdom of God. And that by his very death, by his very act of sacrifice, is the thing that makes him worthy, not by the strength as we think of strength.
Right. And I mean, and I would even say, like, this is why, like, this is subversive literature. And this is what makes apocalyptic literature like Revelation necessary for us, mm-hmm. because it's really honestly hard, for us to understand that. It's hard for us to understand what it actually means to be marked by the Lamb. And we're going to jump into that for next week's scripture passage, on what does it actually mean to be lambs in mm-hmm. a world full of lions. And we're going to have to deal with some tough questions, specifically as Americans and as Christians in America, mm-hmm. because we've been fed from such young ages about how to be victorious, mm-hmm. and how to be lions. I when I preached this passage a couple of back in November, I think it was in the lectionary passage again, like the whole chapter, was that I used the clip from the All Blacks. Have you seen that?
I have.
The rugby team All Blacks. Do you know about them?
I've heard of it.
Okay. So there's this Australian, not Australian, New Zealand team called the All Blacks. And they have this tradition before they play the game. Like, they get on the field and they do this like tribal dance. I mean, and it is scary and intimidating the way that they do it. I mean, and that's kind of what we're brought up with. Like, we want that. We want our mascots to be real and powerful. We watch the Avenger movies and, you know, we want our heroes to be like Thor coming smashing in with a hammer. But instead, what it means to be Christian is to be people who are identified with the slaughtered lamb. Mm-hmm. And it means witnessing through martyrdom. Mm-hmm. It means taking on the identity of the lamb rather than embracing the identity of the lion, which is like first nature for us. It's a foreign concept to take on him and to be marked in that way.
Yeah. Which I think is, you know, the way that we are pairing this with John, one of the ways that we mark ourselves as followers of the Lamb and as lambs ourselves, sheep ourselves, is that we have to forgive like Jesus forgives. That forgiveness is one of the ways that we live out this sacrificial lamb type life.
Right.
And so that's where we're kind of honing in on the John passage with where Jesus is forgiven.
So how like Jesus forgives Peter.
Yeah. And he does it not in an abusive way and not in a strong rebuke, not in a shaming way, not in a way that's going to make Peter hang his head and leave and feel discouraged, but in a way that's uplifting, in a way that's encouraging, a way that offers forgiveness and reconciliation at the same time. That slaughtered lamb living is forgiveness, that internal thing where we refuse to be controlled by what somebody else does to us, like Jesus did on the cross when he says, forgive them. And here right. he's doing it with Peter. He could have been bitter or grudging or, you know, any of us would have been that way towards Peter for denying us. But then also reconciliation, which is the other side, which is the external manifestation of that internal thing that we've already done, where we reach out and we offer a hand of restoration and we restore the relationship. So that's kind of where yeah. where we're taking the slaughtered lamb.
And it's done. And it's done through a meal too, which I think is interesting. Like Jesus prepares this meal and invites them to eat with him. Yep. And then he hands them the bread and the fish.
Yeah.
It's almost like the table of the lamb is being mm-hmm. offered to his disciples who all betrayed him and mm-hmm. left him alone. So there is, you're right. There is that very present manifestation of an internal action. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's a great way to go at it. And then you could also even take it one step further and talk about how Jesus is preparing Peter in the dialogue by saying, do you love me? No, Peter, do you really love me? Peter, do you really love me? Because if you really love me, then you're going to start looking like me. And what that means is that you're going to become a martyr. You're going to be blind and somebody else is going to lead you. And then you're going to die because of me. Mm-hmm. Man, and like, honestly, like, how hard is that to preach?
Yeah, it is.
Like, I mean, to ask people, like, do you love Jesus? No, do you really love Jesus? Wait, are you sure about how much you love Jesus? Because if you really love Jesus, you're going to probably have to give up your retirement plan. Mm-hmm. What? If you really love Jesus, you're probably going to have to cross the aisle and forgive that person mm-hmm. that you've held a grudge against for 30 years. If you really love Jesus, you're going to stand in the margins for the people who are being persecuted in our country and for the immigrants that are being told that they don't have a place with us.
Yep.
For the war-torn countries all around the world and for the minorities that are still being persecuted because our country, even though may not necessarily be obtrusively racist, is still very presently racist in a lot of our actions and in a lot of our institutions. Mm-hmm. Like, that's hard to preach.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very hard. And I think that's one of the things it's hard to embody. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to, you know, and it's one thing to think about for if we just think about forgiveness as this internal thing that we just, oh, okay, I forgive them. But it doesn't actually lead to any external manifestation, then it's just, then it doesn't have an effect. It doesn't actually change anything. It's only right. when forgiveness is paired with external reconciliation. It's only when forgiveness is paired with actual action that it actually makes a difference in the world, and that forgiveness in the way that Jesus shows us in the gospel, and then how we see it, him be glorified for it in Revelation. Like this is the picture of what it means to be this sort of kingdom, is one that is forgiving and reconciling all, and not withholding love, food, shelter from anyone, that is open and welcoming to all. And that is hard to do.
It really is, because most of us don't like to think that we're like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, let me say that in another way. Most of us like to think that we're good people, and we are kind of ignorant of our privileges or of our blind spots or of the things that we're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us are basically morally good people, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, in our churches.
Yeah.
Like, we are. Mm-hmm. Like, and so it's really hard for us to take that next step and to embrace this identity of the Lamb that calls us to leave our comfort zones, to abandon our own identities, and to take on this new identity that is forged with sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. We want to fight back like lions, and Jesus continues.
We want to fight back like lions. Yeah.
Yeah, and Jesus continues to tell us that that's not my way.
Right.
That's not my way.
Right.
And even when he raises from the dead, even when he conquers death itself, he is still marked by the scars of that sacrifice. And as we see in Revelation, continually is sacrificed, continually right. to be slaughtered. Like, this isn't something that Jesus did one time and it's done. Like, he is continually sacrificing himself on the, for the good of all, you know?
Right. Well, and what I like too is how chapter 5 concludes, and it concludes with this new worship song, mm-hmm. like this new song that's being sung. And it's really familiar to the song that was sung earlier in Revelation
right.
to the Almighty One.
Right, like, to the one seated on a throne. Correct, yeah. To the,
yeah, and so the image of the Lamb is intimately connected with the image of God, with the Imago mm-hmm. Dei. It's the restoration of the image that was broken in the fall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. some good stuff. And it is. Yeah. Sorry.
That's the thing too. We've tried to, and I think, you know, kind of something that you mentioned earlier about it's hard for us to be blind. It's easy for us to be blind to our own prejudices, our own privilege, our own, you know, things where we're blindly participating in these systems, which for us at Catalyst was really why system failure helped set us up for this discussion so clearly. We have many people right. in our church that are struggling, that feel the tension of, no, but this, I thought this was the way that I was supposed to follow Jesus. And we're pointing out throughout the system failure, well, actually, this is breaking. This is not the way of Jesus. And this is a broken system within our culture. And so they're having an identity crisis individually. And so now we get to come back and say, okay, if you've been feeling that tension, don't worry, you're not alone. They've been feeling it since the beginning of the church. And yeah. this is the letter that's going to help shape us. It was meant to shape us as God's people. And this is an image of Jesus. This is what Jesus acted out. And this is what the church is supposed to be. So let's see if we can do that. And all right. the other stuff, like, so let's not worry about that. Like, let's preach Jesus, preach what the scripture says. And I know like, that can be misconstrued as well, but that's what we're trying to do in this series, is say, like, take a look, like, see if there's a difference between the way that you think Christianity should be lived out and the way that the scriptures say Christianity should be lived out, then one of you is wrong. And, you know, what are you going to do about that?
right. So how are we going to respond? Which yeah. is a really great way to end and to jump into next week. So, thanks for joining us on this podcast. We hope that you continue to join us in this series of Identity Crisis, looking at people of God in our current situations and cultures through the Book of Revelation and the Gospel of John. I hope you come back next week, because I have an interesting thought on this next passage and actually how I'm interpreting it in my own life. Which I think it's hard for me. So I'd like to share that. But we appreciate your time. We appreciate your listening. As always, if you have a thought or an idea, or if you just want to share how your preaching through this lectionary has helped you personally or has impacted your church, we're always looking for feedback and for comments. And you can do that at Facebook.com/catchylecti, right? Is yep. that right, Jonathan? Okay, I got it right this time. Or catchylecti.com, where you can get our cast or notes and the sweet media that Mr. Sprang makes personally. And if you're interested in my thoughts, and more of my thoughts or anything like that, you can find me on Twitter at Patrick Glenn, or you can find me at my church's website, faithcommunitynaz.church. Jonathan, where can they find you?
You can find us, all of our sermons as we preach the lectionary, at catrow.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at IamSprang, S-P-R-A-N-G.
Awesome. Thanks, guys, and grace and peace to you.